It's November 2020. Welcome to Muse News, the BCMA's monthly museum sector news podcast. Each month, we recap some of the latest breaking news, happenings, and announcements for museums, galleries, and heritage organizations from across BC and beyond. I'm Ryan.
I'm Lorenda.
Join us as we explore the latest Muse News. Langley's Farm Museum welcomes a generous donation. The BC Farm Museum will be able to turn its wish list of projects into a to-do list, thanks to a $250,000 donation from a local farmer. Ann Blau made the donation recently, and the museum vice president Sid Pickrell said it'll help secure a future for the 54-year-old facility. Quote, "It's all been done by volunteers, and we struggle a bit like all museums do." The museum has received other financial donations, but Blau's contribution is the largest it has ever received, meaning that the museum's volunteer board can decide how best to spend the money. Quote, "We can use it for so many things, and we have so many projects on the go," said Pickrell. Currently, the museum's volunteers are working on projects to have better lighting on the artifacts, and are examining a radiant tube heating system to provide better temperature control in the large museum buildings.
The Comox Valley Art Gallery and AVI Health and Community Services are hosting a program that takes a hard look at the overdose crisis from the perspective of frontline workers and from Comox Valley residents with firsthand experience. Walk With Me is a multifaceted project consisting of guided story walks with headphones and an exhibition of artwork and audio stories. The objective is to cultivate awareness that leads to change. "We're inviting our community into a project of solidarity with people at the heart of the crisis," said Sharon Karsten, the gallery's director of research and community development. Les Eaton was a part of a recent story walkthrough in Courtney. He found walking with headphones to be a creative way to present the topic, noting a powerful difference between a beautiful backdrop of the Courtney River and the narration of the sad stories. "I can relate to them," said Eaton, who recently moved from Nanaimo to receive treatment at the Comox Valley Recovery Center. "I've struggled with addiction pretty much my whole life. I'm in treatment now. It's important just being able to keep in contact with those kinds of stories to remind myself what it was like, or I'll forget that I have this disease that I think is a disease of addiction, of the mind and the spirit." The audio stories are powerful, honest, and at times brutal. In one story, a woman details the pain associated with her grandmother's suicide and how the doctor took her off opiates too abruptly. Another woman speaks about her 20-year-old boyfriend who has an addiction and wants to end his life. "I wish we could have helped you," another person said about a single mother who needed treatment. "But there is an element of hope in some of these stories. Recovery," one person says, "can help people feel like there's nothing wrong with them." "You're not too old to renew yourself," says a former drug user. In one of the stories, Eaton found a verse in a poem read by a girl to be especially powerful. "Every time you pick up drugs, just remember you have a family that loves you." "This is something that I've realized in my history of drug use and alcoholism," Eaton said. "I've overdosed a couple of times and really lucky that I'm alive. I've also been on the end where I've been helping people and administering Narcan to users in a safe using situation and then going home and using the same drugs. It's such a crapshoot now," he said. "We never know if what we're doing is going to be the last time you ever wake up. It's hard to say with the drugs now. They're all very contaminated." Walk With Me continues until November 21st. It runs on Wednesdays and Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. A bridge walk goes from 11 a.m. till noon, followed by food and discussion at the Gallery Plaza until 1 p.m. A second session, alley walk, runs from 1 until 2 p.m. The gallery is located at 580 Duncan Avenue, and registration is encouraged, but drop-ins are always welcome, as space allows.
McMurray Métis find a new way to celebrate Métis Week during the pandemic. The COVID-19 pandemic isn't stopping the McMurray Métis in Fort McMurray, Alberta, from teaching kids about Louis Riel and celebrating Métis Week. Typically, Métis Week concludes a large festival with 2,000 attendees. But this year, the McMurray Métis are putting together a documentary-style video to teach kids about Métis culture and Louis Riel. The roughly hour-long interactive video will be presented to students in grades 5 and 7, and will include a history of Louis Riel, an elder teaching Cree, and a discussion about traditional regalia. McMurray Métis President Gail Gallup says this is the first time in more than 15 years they haven't been able to hold a festival during Métis Week. She says large gatherings have always been part of celebrating Métis culture. Quote, "It just brings people together and gives a good feeling no matter who you are, and that's why we continue to do this."
Soldiers who died in battle or who succumbed to their wounds in overseas hospitals during the World Wars of the 20th century were often not returned home for burial. So the Maple Ridge Cemetery does not have quite the representation of the community's loss that one might expect. While doing research for a local scout troop, Maple Ridge Museum curator Shay Henry said she discovered the active servicemen and veterans who are interned here are, for the most part, those soldiers who died of war wounds after returning home, those who died prior to shipping out, or those who died outside of wartime while still in active military service. The leader of the scout group called and asked if we had any info on these five soldiers that were buried at the cemetery, Henry said. She wanted to bring her troop here for Remembrance Day and tell them these stories and make sure the soldiers are not forgotten. The curator thought it was a great idea, so they dug into the museum's archives, as well as fallen soldiers and ancestry websites to see what she could find. Henry discovered Wilfred McCrethan is the sole active duty soldier from the First Great War buried in the cemetery. He was wounded in Europe, most likely in Belgium or France, in 1916 while serving in the 54th Battalion. After a recovery period in England, he was transferred home to BC, but died of secondary meningitis in the New Westminster Hospital in April of 1918. Sadly, disease and infections as a result of war wounds was a very deadly part of the First World War, said Henry. The earliest death of a Second World War vet occurred in December 1942. Edward Harris died in Royal Canadian Air Force flight training accident in Vulcan, Alberta. An article in the local Gazette paper said full military honors were accorded to him. His funeral service was held in St. George's Anglican Church, which was on Selkirk Street, and was well attended by a large crowd of friends and acquaintances. William George Bend also passed away on Canadian soil in June 1944. The 19-year-old soldier was a new enlist who had just graduated high school. He succumbed to an infection, the result of a gangrenous appendix. It was an unfortunate death of someone so young, Henry said. A Vancouver newspaper reporting on war wounds and casualties lists him as a war casualty of natural causes. He died in a hospital in New Westminster. Albert George Eden died in August 1946. He was a member of the RCAF during the Second World War and received many awards, including the 1939 to 1945 Star, Aircrew Europe Star, Defense Medal, War Medal 1939 to 1945, and the Canadian Volunteer Service Medal. Also serving with the RCAF was Maurice Leonard Sims. He died of heart failure in a Vancouver military hospital in December 1946 at the age of 48. Sims was a carpenter by trade and served overseas while in his 40s. Henry said one of the things she noticed when performing the research was how varied in age the veterans were. One of these soldiers was 19 when he died, and one of them was 48, she said. That's two different generations fighting in the same war, so that was surprising.
Museum exhibit Caribou Strong shares stories and experiences through the 2017 wildfires. Community members from throughout the Caribou region will have a platform to share their stories and lived experiences through the 2017 wildfires in a new exhibit at the Museum of Caribou Chilcotin. Opening November 6, Caribou Strong: Resiliency in the Face of the 2017 Wildfires aims to paint a picture of how the community banded together in the face of devastating historic wildfires, which forced an almost two-week evacuation of the city in 2017. The exhibit will showcase a vast collection of submitted stories, photographs, videos, and objects loaned by the museum's residents, businesses, and first responders on how they were affected during the wildfires. Quote, I think the overall theme throughout is something that connects and unites us, says Casey Bennett, project assistant with MCC. You'll see sad stories. You'll see uplifting stories. It's really something everyone here in the Caribou can relate to.
The UMISTA Cultural Center in Alert Bay is celebrating its 40th year with a virtual unveiling of their latest exhibit, curated for the anniversary. 40 years ago, the UMISTA Cultural Center was formed in part to repatriate ceremonial masks, regalia, and other artwork that were stolen in the 1920s during the Potlatch Band. The items were sold to art collectors and doled out to Indian agents for their private collections. Finally, the Potlatch Band was lifted in 1951 and the Kwakwaka'wakw people asked for their things to be returned. One by one, masks were returned and are now displayed in a permanent exhibit. UMISTA, which means something or someone has been returned after being stolen, is much more than just a museum, as the 40th anniversary exhibit will demonstrate. It's also a research hub dedicated to chronicling the history of the Kwakwaka'wakw people and developing an orthography of the Kwakwala language. The orthography developed a written form of Kwakwala, a language that has no alphabet. The written system has to communicate sounds visually so learners can pronounce the words correctly. Repatriating the masks and developing the orthography is personal work for UMISTA's board chairperson, Bill Cranmer. His father was the famous Dan Cranmer. It was Dan's potlatch in 1921 that drew the attention of the Indian agents and from where most of the masks and regalia were confiscated by the government. Of course, through all of our years of working with repatriation, we've really got to understand why the potlatch law was put in place and why the government did that, Bill said. For a long time, people were asking, why did the church and government want to stop your ceremonies? It was to weaken our people so it would be easier to steal our land. They pretty near succeeded. The strength and resurgence of Kukwakiwak people today prove the failure of the government's attempts. Umissa's 40th anniversary exhibit is one more celebration of cultural might. The strength and resurgence of Kukwakiwak people today prove the failure of the government's attempts. Umissa's 40th anniversary exhibit is one more celebration of cultural might. Due to coronavirus, Umissa is asking fans not to visit the museum in person, but to take advantage of their online exhibits. Donations in lieu of admission tickets are also greatly appreciated. To find more details, check out the Umissa's Facebook page.
NDP says it will build a South Asian museum in Surrey. The BC NDP promised to build a new museum devoted to BC's South Asian history. This election promise was made Tuesday, October 20th at R.A. Nicholson Park in Newton. Quote, it's been an honor to announce that a re-elected NDP government will build the first ever museum dedicated to the South Asian Canadian community in BC, said Ginny Sims, NDP candidate for Surrey Panorama. The South Asian community has played a critical role in BC's history, and it's time to recognize that contribution. The exact location of the museum is not yet determined, but public consultation will come.
A Vancouver woman is giving away her home in Cambie Village for free, as long as the new owners pay to move it off her lot. In what she calls the ultimate recycling adventure, Katie Dunsworth-Rich is attempting to give her heritage home a new home itself. She bought the house about 10 years ago, but her family has since outgrown the 5-bedroom, 1-bathroom home. Based on several factors, including the age of the house and Vancouver's building codes, the cost to renovate the 1920s arts and crafts style home rivaled that of building a brand new home, she said. Rather than simply tearing down the house or moving, Dunsworth-Rich is hoping someone will give her beloved home a second life. We couldn't just tear down the home. We love it so much, she said. I love the idea of the house having a second life somewhere. Having gone to high school with someone from the Nickel Bros, a local structural moving company, she knew physically moving the house was a possibility. She still needs to get a few permits before the move, but finding a new homeowner is mostly in the hands of Nickel Bros, she said. Well, no deal has gone through yet. Someone has put a deposit down, they tell her. As for Dunsworth-Rich's lot, she plans to build a new home on the property once her heritage home is safely on its new foundation. I definitely don't like the idea of the house just going into a landfill. It's well built, it's functional, Dunsworth-Rich said. We'll try to preserve that heritage and that character in the new house, just with more bathrooms.
Thanks, Lorenda. Paranormal investigators connect with Point Ellis House spirit. On Halloween, Victoria's Point Ellis House invited paranormal investigators to connect with the historic site's infamous spirit. Don Kirkham is a clairvoyant who founded Beyond Belief Paranormal Events, an island-based group that aims to help people better understand paranormal activity in their homes and workplaces. This week, she and her team brought their tools to Point Ellis House Museum. They were investigating, quote, ghostly and unexplained encounters at the museum, which some say is haunted. In past investigations, visitors have been able to join the team and try their hand at finding spirits, but with COVID-19 making an in-person event impossible, they created a video of their investigation instead. This 40-minute video was streamed on the museum's YouTube channel, with a live question and answer period following. Point Ellis House was turned into a museum in 1967, and since then, visitors and staffs have reported strange activities that they can't explain. Some say they've seen doors open and close on their own, watched lights switch on and off, and heard footsteps when no one is around, and in some cases, even heard a piano playing on its own. Kelly Black, the museum's executive director, said he hasn't had any scary encounters himself, but has been in the house when others have been spooked. Black relates the following story. Once someone was doing pest control in the house and descended into the museum's basement to check on the traps, while Black stood at the top of the stairs. When the person reached the bottom of the stairs, they asked Black, who was still at the top of the stairs, if he had followed them down, because they had just felt someone behind them. Quote, and that pest control person never came back, said Black. For Muse News, this is Ryan. Haunt. Over to you, Lorenda.
Thanks, Ryan. To stay up to date on breaking Muse News, follow our Twitter at BC Museums ASSN. And if you would like your Muse News to be shared on this podcast, email the BCMA at museumsassn.bc.ca. Thank you, and good night.